All right, I'm Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nullcast live AM episode for those who may be watching on YouTube. Bud, got a bunch to discuss. Have some first impressions of some of the June enrollees we can go and talk about. Have ACC Media Days on the horizon, and got a release of a long sought and very much anticipated video game. So fun little Nullcast here, dead of summer, although feels kind of like we've made our way over the worst of it. And, you know, football is but only so far away. So look forward to this morning show.
No doubt about it, man. Been enjoying all y'all's content on Battles M. Got a lot of folks in the chat here starting off with Tuesday.
For the live listeners, we will have a stream of the game, players playing from, I think, noon to 7 today. So, you know, if you're just bouncing around the office or whatever else, we will be doing that, and check the Battles in Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be. But, yeah, excited about that. So, in fact, I think Sinone and Max are playing in the kickoff game at 11, and then we'll go from there. So,
who do we have in that one?
Probably Max. I don't know that either of them's a diehard video gamer, but if there's an iota of competition about it, I can promise you that Max has gotten some work in behind the scenes.
Is there a player on this team that we know is just filthy on the sticks?
I'm excited to find out. I'm looking forward to it, and I was given a pretty large dose of humility last night, but there was a time where I was really damn good at this game. So I look forward to spending a week or so, and then you know, seeing where I am against today's use.
I may or may not have a very embarrassing video coming out where 40-year-old dad gets his butt whipped, and then professional video gamers explain exactly what I'm doing wrong, or what I could be doing better. Like, hey, bro, that's actually not the speed trigger. Things like that. On like a decade ago, Derwin James was always the guy that, like, he would dunk on people constantly, mm-hmm. and then post it on his Instagram and Twitter, and just, you know.
No, he was not just a okay.
He was very, very good at Madden and some other games as well. All right, so I thought actually it would be fun to go through this roster a little bit and just discuss, because I saw some people saying, "Oh, this team on the game sucks" or whatnot. And I have a take. I think they actually kind of nailed the exact strengths and challenges that Mike Norvell will have running this football team this year. Like I know, obviously, you know, Ben Hommiller, who was over there and does a great job with EA, like, he's a Knoll. There's like several Knolls on the dev team. Like, if there's a team they know, the level of detail with this team, I think they kind of nailed it, dude. I mean, not kind of. I think they really nailed it. Like, having Osceola come out on Renegade, and just like they got every little detail right in this game. Like with Tennessee, the direction that Tennessee turns after they run through the tee, you know, things like that. I guess I saw some complaints they didn't get the band uniform right, but man, if I'm EA, I'm like, oh, I missed the band uniform. Okay. All right. We know we did pretty good if the band uniform is not perfect. I think if you get past the teams that I would define as like the really cheesy teams. So to me, that would be Ohio State, Oregon, and Alabama, especially because of how souped up Milroe is in this game. I think Florida State's a sneaky, really good team to play as if you're a good player. Now, if you're not a good player, I don't know how good this team is to play with. But from what I see, right, obviously, you got to sub out Montgomery on the offensive line, but, you know, left to right, like Darius Washington, 89. Okay. Rocking with that. Keandre Jones at an 83, or if you want to put somebody else there, like they have Armella as a 78, right? Center, Mo Smith, 88 and a 90 strength. Hello. Take that all day.
Okay. Yeah.
Richie Leonard, 83. And then Jeremiah Byers, 84. That's one of the best offensive lines in the game. Okay, so I got that. I think they freaking nailed DJU. honestly, like they gave him 77 speed, which I think is better than some people would anticipate. But if you've seen him recently in that Circle K commercial, I don't know if Battles In had anything to do with that, but pretty awesome there. He's looking trim, so 77 speed, I can get with it. Guy's like 25 years old or however old he is, so that 90 awareness, liking that. And then 97 throw power. And you got to understand like how things pair up. If you look at this offense, do they have guys who catch the ball consistently if you are not user catching it? No. Does that reflect what happened in spring too often? Actually, yes, unfortunately. Do they have guys with a boatload of speed? Yes. So you got a good old line. You can run the ball. You basically force people to put extra guys in the box against you. And you got a quarterback with 97 speed, and they gave DJ 87 deep accuracy, which is good. Now, here's the key. You got to look into these guys' ratings, and they actually nailed this based on real life. His throwing on the run rating is a 77. With DJ, which historically is accurate. Now, I know FSU has some confidence that they can improve that, but ultimately, if you're a video game designer, you need to kind of go with what the guy's history has been. And DJ historically has been an inaccurate passer on the run. 77. But if you just keep your feet still with DJU and you have an O-line that's all 82, 83, or like 89, and you got a quarterback with a 97 throw power and you got multiple guys on the offense with like 95 plus speed. I mean, dude, that is a recipe to put up a lot of points. And you got some sneaky subs you can put in, like Jalen Lucas is really kind of nice in this game. I think Landon Thomas, if you want to go with two tight end sets, is pretty solid. Again, you need to be a good player, I think, to really, really rock with FSU, because some of these guys you need to use or catch, in my opinion. Like, you know, Jalen Brown, right? Benson, another guy. They're probably going to get open based on the speed. I will say, but also, Benson on the jet sweep is nasty. It's a little, that little shovel pass. When I first put it on, I was playing on Heisman, and I went 7 of 26, but I did hit 2 60-yarders with Benson. So that was 2 of my 7 completions were with the shovel pass. So I was a little embarrassed. I'm kind of rusty with it, man. But like, I kind of like this. And are you going to be a consistently like throwing for 65%, always looking real smooth with this offense? No. And that's very realistic. I don't think this offense is going to look crazy smooth this year all the time. But hopefully they can run the ball a little better and they can hit some explosive plays, and you have a very good play caller in Mike Norvell. That's the challenge in this game. You got to be the Mike Norvell. Can you be a really good play caller?
Can you be Mike Norvell? Yeah, that's fun, man. Yeah, no. So I haven't played any football video games since probably 2009, somewhere in that area, and fired up. Took me a while to find a Walmart/Target in the metro area that had a purchasable console in stock, and made my way back, played 2 games last night. Just did like a quick exhibition play against Clemson. First game, there were some professors that didn't have their t-shirts on up in the stands reading books. I'll put it that way. Lost, like, just got humiliated. Second game won, and I'll say that you want to go in, you want to change your receivers. You want to get Lucas and Ja'Kai Douglas involved much more than they will be just out of the pack, so to say. And then it, like, the running game is going to take a second to learn, but there's a lot of stuff there. And Roydell Williams is a really good player. Toe Philly can be used in some fun ways as well. So, as far as like players at Florida State that are just ridiculous, like Pat Payton is insane. Pat Payton is your best player. AZ, very, very good. Fentrell Cypress is very good in this game from what I can, you know, I'm 2 games in, but I would say those are the 3 that really jump out at you. If anything, now look, an interior defensive lineman is not just going to go around and just, you know, throw people around, but they might have shorted Josh Farmer. Would be the feedback that I would give you. So,
I'm glad you went to the defense, because I do think that the defense is why you want to pick the Noles. If you're a, like because defense on this game is hard. Okay. And in my opinion, it is hard to be to play as a corner. Now, I know some guys who stream online. I've been watching some of the streams online to kind of figure out what I've missed, you know, as far as like, because I haven't been playing Madden a whole lot. Being able to play as like a user controlled Cam Riley or like a user controlled Devontae Brown in the secondary or at the linebacker level. That's, and I do think you want to sub in just on the video game, Cam Riley for Cryer. Like putting him with Murphy is probably the right call if you want to control somebody. I mean, having pass rushers who rip off the edge and two really good corners, that's a huge, huge advantage because it's hard to get stops in this game, man. I mean, like I thought I was playing pretty good defense and Restrepo tore me up. Now, I still won the game because, like you said, Fentrell, actually, his awareness is extremely high, and he got a little pick six on Cam Ward because Miami was passing before the half with 14 seconds left from their own 18. It was very much like
the realism is incredible in this game.
The realism is high.
Mismanage of situational football.
Do you remember the Drew Weatherford pick he threw against Boston College, like with like 7 seconds?
Yeah, I remember. Half? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you want to throw up in your mouth. And yeah. I mean, granted, I don't really know why we're passing the situation anyway. It's not, I mean, he threw the pass, it's his fault, but like there were some questionable seeing at that time in Tallahassee.
And weren't we wearing black jerseys that day?
Yes, black jerseys for the, it was real hot.
Real hot. It was
a buffoonery.
Good time.
Yeah, it looked like that. But I think this defense is largely the reason why you want to play with the Noles, because I mean the corners, like you don't have to play as a corner. You got two corners who are probably going to get some picks. And I mean, getting Pat Payton there, like Pat Payton's really, really fun to play with. Computer Pat Payton is also really good and you can control somebody else. I like it a lot. And I mean, if I'm playing this game, I'm kind of playing this game like, all right, I'm probably going to suck on defense. I need a really good computer defense, like, you know, computer rating defense. And then I need to try to like manufacture points on offense with some guys who have some speed. That's kind of exactly what Mike Gravel's challenge is, right? It's like, hey, you're probably going to play really good defense. You're probably going to crush some guys up front, right? And are you going to, you know, be able to score enough points on offense? I think for the majority of games, you probably will, especially if the offensive line stays healthy. I think you got to like, you know, I think you have to like what you have there on offense enough to manufacture some points and just have general trust in Mike Norvell. And you have a defense that's going to get some stops. Now, am I as good as a play caller as Mike Norvell? Based on the results so far, once I get on the Heisman level, I would say probably not. You know, we'll see. Pat Payton is absolutely insane. You're right. I mean, 85 speed with the DN Pat Payton, 92 acceleration. I mean, 89 awareness. 89 jumping. Again, that's the other thing. If you're playing as Pat Payton,
he does knock down balls. It's like Payton's ridiculous. I would kind of build your defensive ideas around Pat Payton. And again, small sample size. AZ and Fentrell have both put pick sixes on the board for me. Shaheem Brown is somebody that I was playing with, like personally controlling. Lundy, good situationally. But yeah, I think the linebackers just for video game sake are probably your two new kids. So not kids per se, as they're both transfers, but
100%. Like I am, you can certainly throw on the linebackers for FSU. Like that, that's something I would probably control for sure. And Lundy actually, they gave him an 85 awareness, which is pretty good. I mean, 77 agility. I get that, 79 speed, but like the 85 awareness helps a little bit there. I would probably user control Cam Riley personally. Like that's what I've been doing to to some success. I mean, I'm not getting a whole lot of stops, I'm not gonna lie, but like I get a couple. And then I don't know. It's you get the whole like Fentrell or AZ pick six, and it just that does seem to happen a lot. Like, which if that happens this year for the Noles, that'll be extremely exciting. If you look at like other teams on the schedule, I don't think that like they juiced anybody too much. Got a little bit of faith in the Clemson offense at times, I guess. But I mean, they gave what they give Klubnik a 87 overall. Okay, like that's a little bit of faith, I guess. But I mean, you know, Brown, Williams, Stellato, 85, 83, 80, and not a ton of speed on the offense. Like, you know, the receivers aren't that scary. Moffa's got a high rating, which I think he probably should. O-line, Moffa's, you know,
good. Moffa's good. Deservedly good. Real quickly, a couple questions in the chat that ironically were very similar to what Bud and I were talking about right before we started recording. Longtime supporter Christian Surio asked, how is Jackson rated higher than Farmer? Yeah, I mean, look, there are, I think, an 85 and an 86 respective, so there's not a massive gap there. But I would, you know, those are two of my favorite guys on the team, whatever, great players. But Farmer has certainly given you a little bit more of which to base off of. Surprised to see that rating. Fitzgerald rating dirty. I'm not sure about that. Kicking does take a second, and then once you get it, I think you'll get it pretty quickly. But it is an interesting kind of kick system. Who the hell is wide receiver number 13, Darnell Lee? So yeah, again, something that came up in our conversation. So not every player opted into this game. I would remind you all of that. And also, there are just going to be some random guys in there for that reason and also just filling the roster. Let's see, they got to get the Nolcast into the game for next year. Bud Negrum doing pre-recorded instant reactions would be incredible. Yes, that would be a lot of fun. I will say that we have a relationship with Xbox. I'm excited to talk to you guys more about that in a week or so. I think we're one of a couple different team-specific podcasts that have entered into this. And, I'm not in the game. You won't find me in the game anywhere, but you will find my man's blue chip ratio in the video game, which is freaking awesome, bud. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Just to see Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio was a moment for me, and I'm sure it was cool for you. So, that's really awesome. And, we've done some things over these 15 years, and I congratulate you on that. That's really cool to see.
I was excited, man. Like, I didn't get money out of the deal. Wasn't really looking for it. You know, I really wanted the game back because it was something I truly enjoyed playing. And I think it's a real big flex for my boys. Like, they're too young to understand, you know. Mm-hmm. But like, I think it'd be like, hey, just flex on them when they get older. Your dad's in a video game, bro.
Yeah.
A couple questions about Hakeem. I will answer a couple of these. So Lee is not supposed to be Lee's not an approximation of Hakeem. First of all, we know this because the attributes are nowhere similar. Also, Hakeem is not a junior. However, you cannot make a create a player Hakeem Williams and put him in. And the reason is because literally the reason why the game went away for 10 years, because the lawsuit, because you're not allowed to appropriate somebody's name, image, and likeness unless they actually give you permission. Hakeem is not the only important player missing from this game. It's still entirely possible that these guys can opt in. And in fact, I anticipate that some other players probably will opt in. And I'm not saying Hakeem will or won't. I don't know the specifics on his situation, and I didn't ask around about it yet. But like, there's also a big-time defensive lineman from Ohio State who's not in yet. I know Miami is missing several players in the secondary, as you will find out if you play against them. Like, you, DJ will have a field day against the secondary as currently comprised on the video game. This is the early release, right? And they will do multiple roster updates. I anticipate that at some point Colorado's ratings will probably have to come down, or I will be just very wrong about Colorado if they continue to be that level of team on the field that they are on the video game. But yeah, like, he still has a chance from what I understand to opt in. In fact, it is possible. I'm not saying I have any knowledge on this because I do not. Maybe he already has sent the paperwork in to opt in, but yet like they're going to maybe batch update it, right, with a lot of guys coming in. But yes, regardless, you do want to sub out this guy named Lee and put in, I recommend putting in Brown because it, I like having a 95 and 96 speed guy on the outside. It does make the defense respect my passing game a whole lot when I'm running all over people's ass with Royal Williams. So, and hitting the play action with DJ over top. Again, I think the realism here is pretty good. Some people on Twitter were, they hate the playbook. I don't know if I hate it. I don't know if it's as like cheesy, like as, I don't know, man. Like I played with Milrow and Bama last night and that does feel pretty cheesy, but is it cheesy because of Milrow or is it cheesy because of the playbook? I don't know. I may have to load up FSU's roster with the playbook to get Bama and just see, but I don't know. I know we talked video game for like 20 minutes. That feels like a lot. Are there any more video game questions? I don't know. You can kind of sprinkle them in. Do want to tell you about our friends at the Legendary Team. Chad just does a great job for us. 844 FSU loan. 500, I believe. No, plus 500 plus now? Yeah, 500 plus. Nolcast listeners have decided to use Legendary for their home loan needs. And I've done it twice. Obviously, I know Graham, you've done a lot of business with these guys as well, and it's an awesome experience. And 844-FSU-LOAN is that number to dial. We also have the link to the website in the show notes, as always. I don't see Chad in the chat today. Maybe we got loans going on. I don't know. Yeah. Chad is usually in the chat.
Probably working. Good for Chad. Yeah, so let's talk real briefly about the lawsuit, the conference lawsuit. This is something that we, from the beginning, said that we weren't going to have like weekly updates on or something. This stuff just, it's a course, or it's a process. It's got to run its course. So Bud and I are both kind of children of the 90s, and forgive me if I didn't have to shake myself, that I didn't feel like I was living with a certain politician at one point, but, it appears as though the definition of the word is becoming perhaps a focal point of Clemson's argument. And it might be a really good one. And I'm not taking shots at anybody, but just legal friends of mine, either lawyers or, judges have talked to me about the fact that they thought Clemson's argument from day one might end up holding water better, or might end up being a little bit more impactful based off some of the things that they did straight out of the gate. And I think that's continued to be the case. So I give their legal representation credit, and have enjoyed some of the transcripts of the back and forth that have taken place there. But we said we were only going to bring you an update when we thought it was worthwhile. But I'll give it to you. I know you've got a little bit of a better feel for this than I do, just based off your own past professional background. But I do think this is significant, and it's worth us spending a couple minutes on.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I've people can do what they want to do. I've unfollowed some channels that are posting like outrageous, like I don't know. Guys, there's not that much to update on a daily basis about the lawsuit, right? It's, if you scroll back, like some of these thumbnails for YouTube videos look pretty silly, like just from even like 6 weeks ago. But this one is worth discussing because Clemson did, survive the motion, and that means that they're going to be able to continue to sue the ACC in state court in Pickens County, South Carolina, which, of course, I would completely expect the ACC to get a fair fair judge on this. But at the same time, there is a reason why the ACC opposed that being held in South Carolina. It's not all about home court advantage. I'm sure the ACC would like one ruling to stand in the state of North Carolina, but it does matter a little bit. And Clemson's argument, as shown by John Blau, who's a Clemson beat writer for the Post and Courier, I want to give him credit because I thought he did a nice job of bringing this to light, is that the agreement between the ACC and ESPN says that ESPN owns the rights to the Clemson home games for as long as that school is a member of the ACC. Now, it doesn't specifically say is a member at the time of agreement, right? It doesn't say was ever a member during the time of this agreement. It doesn't say is currently a member, clearly. It just says is. So this does, as you mentioned, come down to sort of the Bill Clinton. It kind of depends on what the definition of is. So if Clemson were to just pay the exit fee of like $150, which I'm sure if that's all they had to pay, they would just be gone tomorrow, as would the Noles, as would probably a couple other schools within this conference once the dominoes started to fall, if this happened. And they would no longer be a member of the ACC. Is this agreement poorly drafted such that the ESPN no longer owns the rights to those games? Because if you answered the question, is Clemson a member of the ACC? Well, if they have paid the exit fee and they are out, then no, they are technically not a member of the ACC. Is this a winning argument? I don't know. This is probably one of the reasons why the ACC fought not to have this in South Carolina, as well as not to have it in Tallahassee, which it has lost both. Of course, both are being appealed. Is it one of the reasons why the ACC probably didn't want this contract out?
Yeah.
Probably so. Yeah. I think the better question is, it's not an obvious loser, so it may be something that gets the ACC to the table. And that's ultimately where I think this thing is probably going to have to go, I would guess.
Yeah. Oh, look, okay. Well, when we do our specific video game, I just found a folder that I was looking for 15 minutes before we started in my background there, and I will show you how big of a nerd and maybe a small role that Adderall played in my addiction of the college football game back in the middle of the 2000s. But yeah, I think it's significant. I've talked to two different people about this. They don't think this is some like, you know, oh hell, this whole thing's going to fall apart in the next 10 days or something like that. But this is a, you know, potentially, particularly depending on venue, like you said, potentially the largest argument that has been found by anyone up until this point in time as to the grant of rights. So continue to look at Clemson. Christian asked in the chat, basically, does it only really take one ACC school for them to win their lawsuit? Yeah, more or less so, it does. So this is significant. And the success that Clemson has had is, look, it's why you want another team to jump in with you. It's why if you're Florida State or Clemson, you'd love for another team to jump in with you. I mean, you only need, you know, one or two really successful arguments to be able to kind of have this thing fall apart rather quickly. So we'll just continue to monitor it. Like we said, we're not going to do, you know, weekly shows about this unless it gets to the point where we think it's necessary. But we will, you know, chime in with updates as we think they're warranted. Real quickly before we transfer the conversation to some of the new prospects that have since enrolled in June, want to give our friends at For the Table Restaurant Group a shout out. We've been talking a lot about Charlie Park recently, and that is a fantastic place. But Bud, I have fallen head over heels in love with Social Kitchen, dog. Now it's up on Cary Forest Parkway, so it's up on the north side, you know, northern suburbs. If you're in Tallahassee, or if you're coming from, you know, Atlanta or anywhere north, you're going to go by it there on Thomasville Road. So they have Snake River Farms meat, nice, which if you're not familiar with, is going to be as good of a quality of meat that you can find really anywhere, particularly Tallahassee. You know, if you go to places like, what's the Tampa Steakhouse, Burns, yep, you know, Bones or Chops in Atlanta or something like that, more or less, it is likely the higher end meat that you're ordering at places like that come from Snake River. They really are one of the better purveyors of meat in the country. But they've got, you know, in classic Matt Thompson style, they've got these sandwiches that you can just get, steak Sammy, a Reuben, unsurprisingly, and it's exceptional, as you would expect. But all sorts of just, you know, prepared meals, prepared sides. As somebody that spent like 4 to 5 days a week in Tallahassee over the last 2 months, it's been a nice thing for me to come home with, just to, you know, make myself a little bit more popular by coming home with dinner for the next two nights while I am in town. But no, Social Kitchen is awesome. Would encourage any of our listeners to give it a shot, whether it be that you're in locally in Tallahassee or, you know, it's certainly something that could be incorporated in any kind of tailgate plans that you may have once, you know, once the home schedule kicks off. So always want to thank our friends at the For the Table restaurant group, and particularly want to plant the seed surrounding Social Kitchen.
You're a smart man. Got to bring home a dinner.
Got to bring home, a little food.
Yeah. Very key. Yes. Very key. That's kind of, I think we should just say key. Very key is kind of one of those. Yeah. All right. So basically a month left for FSU to serve notice that they're out if they want to be, if they don't want to play in the league in 2025. Of course, in their initial filing, they did say that they want the notice to be retroactive if they were to win, not a settlement, but if they were to win the suit. So people have asked, like, do we anticipate that being served? I don't know, because I'm not aware of exactly where they are in the settlement talks, if there are any settlement talks going on. I do know that talks happen all the time. Official talks, and especially unofficial talks, you know, maybe not people who are directly running the university, but maybe people who are sort of deputized to, you know, have that kind of, you know, one person removed for plausible deniability. I do note that Matt Baker of Tempe Times discussed yesterday that they are expanding some aspects of the university, which would make it more likely that they're going to get into the AAU. We know that's been a thing they've been trying to, you know, to pump up with the nursing school and some other stuff they got going on. So I think between that, I'm very conscious of some of the latest branding guidance that the university handed down. I know you've seen this too. I think it's been written about a few other places. The, you know, people who are allowed or not allowed to use Osceola and Renegade, certain departments that can or cannot use, you know, Knoll, like, you know, like Knoll Your Role and things like that, that aren't allowed. To me, if you're really focused on AAU membership and you are sort of softening what has been a very, like, defiant stance in some ways on the use of some of the Seminole tribe, but some of the imagery, but obviously the use of the name, man, if that ain't a signal to, like, Big Ten, we're open for business, you know? Now, I'm not saying that that is at the behest of the Big Ten, but if you are doing certain things that just, if you did happen to get your rights free and clear of ESPN, would that make you a bigger target for the Big Ten? Would it make you more palatable to more of these Big Ten presidents who they govern schools that you're going to go in there and kick their ass? Not all of them, but a lot of them, right? Like Northwestern and Rutgers and Minnesota, like, they're not hanging with FSU. So does that make them a little more persuaded to vote yes when it comes time to vote, if you do get your rights free and clear of ESPN? Does it make them persuaded to be like, yeah, you know what, maybe we should give these guys a full share, as opposed to, like, on the clear other side, like the Rutgers or Maryland deal, where mm-hmm. like they've been in the league for like a decade and just still barely got a full share? So I say that. I don't know if you have any comments on that, but I'll lead into something you might have some comments on. The Big 12 rumors. I do not believe FSU is going to the Big 12. I 100% think that any sort of rumors about other conferences having interest in FSU is a positive for FSU's leverage, particularly when it's the Big 12, because Brett Yormark, I'm not going to say he's unhinged, but seems to be like a wild, like, wheeler dealer guy. And if I'm the Big 12,
I give credit to him, though. I mean, he's kept his conference alive and has positioned it to maybe be the third, you know, very clearly the third of three power conferences. But yeah, he wheeling and dealing and might have just pulled one off. Not talking about Florida State or Clemson or anybody else going there, but I'm talking about saving the conference that many times over the past 5 years was presumed to probably be dead once this next round of relocation started. So,
I mean, the move for him to jump the Pac-12 in line of re-upping their deal, even though it wasn't at an insane number, was very pragmatic. Like, he does a lot of things. Like, hey, we're going to go play some games in Mexico and all this other crazy stuff, but we're going to add Gonzaga and or UConn. And the members are like, actually, we don't want to do that. But that was pretty pragmatic. I do think the guy has some business sense to him, clearly, even if he doesn't always understand college sports. If you're the Big 12, here's my worry. Most of your teams recruit like G5 teams. And even your best team, Utah, was a G5 team 15 years ago. When did they join the Pac-12? I mean, it was – like 04 was like them and TCU battling it out, right? Like Meyer was there. Meyer left to go to Florida. They were still in the Mountain West. And then, I mean, so it hasn't been that long. Maybe it's been 20 years. Maybe it's 15. Like, I was listening to, might have been Dellinger, and they were talking about the Big 12 hopes to get two teams in, as does the ACC. But also, like, they hope they can win a playoff game. And I was like, man, I got news for you. You can win. Upsets do happen. If you're the four seed, that means you are playing, most likely based on current projections, one of Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, or Texas. You're a two-touchdown dog. You get that bye, assuming that Texas or Georgia or Ohio State or Oregon whips the hell out of Liberty or whoever they play. You got to go play the five seed. You're the four seed. You got to play them in a neutral site. You're two touchdown underdog on the point spread. You're probably going to get blown out. Like, if you're the Big 12, and we know we're going to have another reorg of the playoff coming up, are you a little worried that you don't have anybody at the very top? Because it's an awesome league. It's a balanced league. Like, the bottom is the floor of that league's real high. Floor don't mean shit. How good is your best team in that league? I think if you're the Big 12, you might be like, ooh, wait a second. We kind of need a team like a Florida State, like a Clemson, like a Miami. I know Miami hasn't won a damn thing for 20 years, but they still have shown the ability to recruit. Now, if they can coach them up and develop, that's another question. But do we have a ceiling team in this league? And the answer right now is no. How worried is Brett Yormark about that? And does that worry spur the Big 12 to do something kind of crazy like, hey, here's a triple share for you. Here's $100 million. Because at that point, I actually would consider the Big 12. Because I don't really think most FSU fans would give a damn about not playing North Carolina or Pitt or Syracuse anymore. You know?
Yeah, no. I mean, if there were some situation where you were the highest compensated team in the country for TV rights, then yeah, you would go do that. Absent something like that happening, and I would certainly question the longevity of being able to support the rest of the conference should you make something like that happen. We'll have to see. You know, we've got some questions here from Lawrence about other sports suffering. Should we go to the Big Ten? I worry about Olympic sports if we go to the Big, particularly soccer and softball, mainly the travel out to the West Coast. SEC is better for us in that regard. Yeah, look, the SEC is the best option as far as, you know, travel and proximity to other stadiums, proximity to other fan bases coming and seeing your stadium. Yeah, I'm 100%. But worry about soccer and softball if you don't get into the Big or the SEC from a financial perspective. I mean, it is a aggressively growing gap between everyone else. And I can tell you from an NIL perspective, you feel it. Okay. When these SEC schools don't have to call their donors to build a new bullpen for their baseball stadium or redo the baseball stadium, because they can just do that from their TV contract and their donors can pour into NIL. That happens. There was a player this year in softball, is my understanding, that requested like $500,000. Okay. Like, it is It's not just football, y'all. It permeates the entirety of these sports. And if you're somebody that loves soccer or softball or whatever else, you want to see us land in the SEC or the Big Ten. And granted, travel's not ideal in the Big. There are some sports where, you know, you're not going to have to adjust your level of competition. You're probably going to have to schedule outside of your conference to get some of the competition that you need. But that's just, you know, that's one of those things. That's a good problem to have, and a problem that you can take care of thanks to having potentially a TV contract that's paying out damn near 3x what your current one is. So just a quick little talk about all sports.
I will also say this, and this is not an FSU thing, but it is something that somebody very plugged in told me just about college sports in general. So first of all, obviously, if you pay any attention to the election odds, and I'm not going to get political on this, but just common sense, the election odds have shifted quite a bit in the last 3 weeks. We could have major changes coming to college sports because if, you know, one party wins the presidency and both the House and Senate, then they're probably going to get some kind of antitrust exemption. And in that way, the courts would find, like, thank God we don't have to deal with this anymore. Congress has granted, like, you know, nobody's suing, take a Supreme Court to see if baseball's antitrust exemption can hold up, right? They just have it. It was declared by Congress. Cool. Well, not declared, but you know, passed. The other thing is when you have change at the, political change, we have no idea what Title IX is going to look like, guys. There's very, very strong chances that, like, college sports administrators will be cheering the hell out of this, and college presidents will be like, oh, shit, no, I actually don't like this at all because of some of the other proposed Title IX changes. But if it doesn't happen, what I have been told is likely to happen is that they want to avoid the public backlash of cutting women's sports and some of these non-revenue sports. So they'll still support them with scholarships, but they will basically make them non-championship level, which means, yeah, it's still a scholarship sport. And scholarships aren't cheap, but they're not necessarily like your biggest expense by multiples. And thus, what you may have is some unfilled scholarships in those sports as those teams become less popular. Now, I'm not talking about women's softball and women's soccer at Florida State. But I'm just talking about in general. Like, I would anticipate Big Ten schools not cutting, but pseudo cutting 2, 4, 5, maybe 6 sports each. A lot of these schools that support this many sports are not going to support that many sports at the championship level. Mm-hmm. So that means, you know what? We're going to travel by bus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Church van.
Yes. For Title IX compliance, it's still going to be scholarship for sure, but we're not going to be paying non-revenue sport coaches $500,000. Like that's not a thing that needs to be happening. From a business perspective, it's bad business, right? From a sports business perspective, from a university business perspective, I think you can actually argue it's a good thing. If depending on what you value, there are two different businesses being run, obviously, but from a sports business perspective, like, you know, women's golf coach making $400,000, that's just bad business. You're not getting sports business out of that. Now, are you getting university business out of that? Very possibly, yes. So it's kind of, you know, parallel tracks that are not necessarily converging, although they do at times. But that's what I think will happen based on somebody pretty plugged in. And I'm not saying that at FSU, but when I hear like, hey, I'm worried about this non-football sport having to travel, man, to me, that is such a short-term worry. I don't think we're going to be traveling, like we're not going to be flying, you know, our women's soccer team out to the West Coast all the time in 10 years. Maybe they do it for a couple years until all this gets sorted, but the people that are running this increasingly, and as PE gets involved, I guarantee you this is going to happen. They're like, wait, what? So we're sending a sport that loses money and we're paying for them to have travel all over the country? Hell no. Like that's.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of my general thought on that. Some athletes that are being sent across the country. Well, not across the country. 3 athletes from Florida State are heading to ACC Media Day. And I will note the troll job from FSU here. beautiful. Did you see this?
Oh, yeah.
So DJU elected not to go to AC Media Day because he wanted to let the guys who were on the undefeated team kind of get their accolades, which I think is a cool decision. Also, I mean, Charlotte's not that cool, so I don't blame him for not going.
He's been many times.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Three high school signees who have been developed into all-conference players, I will note. And the team that relentlessly negatively recruits them over, hey, FSU is going to bring in transfers over top of you, you're not going to play. Two transfers, one high school signee for that school. So I don't think that was accidental. Do you think that was accidental?
No, it's not. I mean, look, I don't go looking into everything, but there's not a whole lot that happens accidentally either. I'm saying that. So, I mean, sending three kids that you signed as three stars and have legitimately turned into, you know, premier players in the conference, if not the nation, at their position is quite the flex. I've been fortunate to get to know all three of them. Super bright guys. Pat Payton doesn't necessarily always speak super loud or whatever else, but like if you can get Pat to talk ball for 5 or 10 minutes, you will realize that you're speaking with someone that is exceptionally bright and has a incredible grasp of the game. And, you know, you're not going to have a problem understanding Josh Farmer. He enunciates and projects his voice. And Darius is just a super, super bright kid who's had a great career and really awesome to see what he's turned himself into. So I think all three will represent Florida State exceptionally well, while at the same time proving the fact that there's a whole lot of developing going on over here. And they're, you know, great representations of the program and great examples of kids that made the decision as high schoolers to go to Florida State. And, you know, by all accounts have been have been rewarded well. Somebody just mentioned AZ's likeness in the game, which makes me laugh because it looks more like I did in high school than AZ Thomas does in college. I'll put it that way.
The cool thing that we didn't have, you know, 15 years ago is they can update things. Yes. Also, Richie Leonard did not opt out. He's in the game. You need to sub in somebody for McDonald or Montgomery or whoever they have at left guard, who's like a 74. So I would suggest subbing in Keandre there in this game. They like Keandre's skills quite a bit, and he will blast some people off the ball for you, especially when he's paired next to Darius, if you throw him in there at left guard. Yeah, I think they'll have a good time AC kickoff. I will be there for that day and that day only, and I don't really care to cover the rest of the ACC kickoff week. I will say thank you, ACC, for lining up Jim Phillips and FSU on that day, so I can just...
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to pop up there for that as well.
Nice. So little Noel Cass roadie?
That would be cool, man. Got to be there just in case it's the last one. So ACC Media Days. There was a time where ACC Media Days were a hell of a lot of fun.
They do a good job with this event, I will say. Like,
oh, they do. As somebody who, when I was working in radio 10 or 15 years ago, who has gone to a lot of these things, they do. It is a high-quality event that I give them credit for that. Absolutely. So
I would choose to go to this over SEC 100 out of 100 times. Mm-hmm. SEC, the odds I can get it in a question very low. Everybody's packed into this main room. You get like Bob from Arkansas and be like, hey coach, how would you rate the level of disrespect for your team this year? And he's like, man, I appreciate that question, Bob. And I would say we're about a 7 out of 10 on the disrespect scale today.
We're about six point seven. A lot of the defense has been very, I'd say 4.5 on the defensive side of the ball, actually, now that I think about it. That's a good question. All right, Bob.
Yeah. No access. It sucks. I would go when CBS had the network relationship, because then we had our own room with those guys and you could actually like chat with them for a little bit off, but it still felt like very like controlled. Like I could just, if I needed to watch SEC Media, I could just watch it on SEC Network.
I have never been when it wasn't in Hoover, okay. since they started moving it around. But dude, when it was in Hoover, it was insanity. But yeah, we're just having media conversation at this point. But yeah. So we talked about good.
You get real player access, you get real coach access. Like if you want to grab Norvell or Dabo, I mean, I don't like for the most part, you can get these guys like one on one at a breakfast if you call up. Like if you have like something like a real story you're working on. And as like a media guy, if you're writing a story, you don't always want to ask your question in front of everybody else, because then you're going to have some of these dudes who just don't respect it and they just aggregate the answer immediately. So ACC is much better. Sorry.
Yeah, no. Good stuff. Being on Radio Row back during the days of like the SEC peak craziness when like all those weirdos were just packing the lobby of the hotel to try to, you know, see Nick Saban, stuff like that. One year we got knocked off air because there was just no crowd control and the lobby just poured into Radio Row and people stepping on our connection. It was wild. But so we talked about the three kids that are going to ACC Media Days that are high school prospects. Want to talk real briefly before we wrap it up about some of the newer high school prospects that have since jumped on campus in June. Before I want to do that, I want to thank our friends at Congruity. Matt Lewis has been a longtime supporter of the Knollcast and continue to get a stream of people reaching out to me asking for introductions. One of which recent was very exciting. I'm hoping our friend, mutual friend Robin, can find some places to work with Matt. He's reached out about Robin has a very interesting insurance business and is working with Matt to see if there's not any some congruity there or synchronicity to be found with Congruity. Whether you're a longtime friend of mine and I'm happy to introduce you to Matt or a listener of the Knollcast or anything else, please feel free to reach out to me. Happy to facilitate an intro and can assure you you're in good hands with Matt Lewis and his team at Congruity.
Did you see Wyatt's email about Congruity this morning?
I did not, no.
I'm just going to read this. Hey guys, hope you're doing well. I just wanted to share a note on Congruity. You may recall that we signed our dental practice up with Congruity a while back. I do, as a small business. It's been a great experience to have their HR expertise on top of the payroll/benefit services. We sold our business last month. Hooray.
Hey, finally. Congratulations.
And the HR, And the HR guidance on the final payout with our employees was also invaluable. While no longer clients, we did refer the new owner to Matt Lewis with our best recommendation. Even though he went to Rutgers, Matt gave him the Knollcast treatment anyway, and they've completed their onboarding last week and are able to essentially carbon copy our policies over to the new owner, making the transition just a little bit less chaotic for the team and the new owners alike. Pretty damn good. Thank you guys so much. Knollcast is the best. Wyatt, first of all, congrats on selling the business. That is fantastic. Yeah. And Matt, great job hooking up the guy, even though he went to Rutgers. Hey, maybe we'll be conference mates
soon. Yeah, maybe that's Matt's doing all sorts of Big Ten groundwork there for us. But Matt Lewis, his team are great. And some new additions to the Florida State roster and team. Certainly there's a lot of excitement out there about a couple people. Elijah Moore has caught a lot of people's eyes, and I've heard some very positive things kind of behind the scenes about him. And I will say the one kid, I'm not even going to say like all the things that I've heard, because I don't think it's fair. And I want to remind people that like coaches see kids differently than say you or I do. Like the kid that they see walk down the hall who just enrolled 2 weeks ago, like they're looking at what he's going to look like in 22 months after working with Storms and projecting things. So just because like they're super high on a kid right now, I don't want you to think like, oh, he's going to go out and catch two touchdowns against Georgia Tech or whatever, you know, like, who was it? Shaheem Brown. You remember a couple of years ago, like immediately with on campus, within 10 days, we were hearing Shaheem Brown. They hit big, and he's going to be this, he's going to be that. Ultimately, Shaheem's grown into a lot of those things, but that was a very educated eye looking at a raw product and knowing what it could turn into. So, Mekhi Dansby is the name that the coaches, you know, look, they're really excited about all these kids. But that is the one guy that I've heard some enthusiasm about, to the point that, like, yeah, I'm not even going to share it because I don't want to set unfair expectations for a kid or whatever. But, like, they think that they hit and they hit and they hit on that one. And maybe as a running back, it may be ultimately as a wide receiver with development hands, whatever else. If you know about what Mike likes to do historically, offensively, like this is a piece that they're very, very excited about. So a local kid, super fast. Some things that you can just tell from what he did in high school, like what ran the fastest time all year at the state championship track meet. So what does that show you? It shows you a kid who continued to work throughout the course of the year. It shows you a kid that performs at the highest moments. It shows you that, you know, somebody that didn't just run, like, rip off a time 3 weeks into the season and then was like, okay, I got my, you know, electronic time that I can go about boasting, but continued to develop and was coachable. I think the future is very, very bright for a lot of these kids. And certainly not even talking about the Croman Hawks or the Cam Davises or all the other kids that have already early enrolled. But I think Florida State had a really, really good class last year. And some of these kids that have just gotten onto campus in June, there's a awful, awful lot of excitement about. Amari Williams as well. Amari Williams is really, really young. Amari Williams is going to need some time. But they think they've got one there as well.
That's encouraging. Like, I think Dansby, just with him, we knew the speed was there. I think the fact that he's continued to get faster after the guy was already fast is huge. Like, if the hands come along, man, like, he's going to be a weapon. And to your point, like, one of the things I think you like about Mike Norvell is that he does seem to be okay. Not just okay, but, like, we'll see a player's ability, like an individual ability, and try to utilize that, you know, as opposed to some coaches, you need to be the total package to be on the field. Now, receivers obviously have to block and whatnot, but, you know, with a guy like a Dansby, right, if he has a specific skill set that you can use, and I think Norvell does do a really good job of saying, okay, like, this is a weapon in our arsenal that we can utilize. And you might say, okay, well, when this guy goes in the game, kind of like when Toa Philly was young, right? They're probably going to throw him the ball to the backfield. Okay. Like, you can know that, and it helps. It certainly helps, but, like, you still got to stop it. Right? And it's not super easy. I like the class that they just signed. Obviously, like Elijah Moore, a lot of people have been raving about. Do I think that it is likely that a freshman who did not early enroll is going to come in and play a big role at receiver? I do not. That historically, like, you can love Elijah Moore all you want. I like his game quite a bit. I will say that historically, my numbers say that freshmen who do not early enroll at receiver are unlikely to get on the field very much. Now, maybe he will be the outlier, but I do want to just kind of check people's expectations on that. Like, I do not anticipate Elijah Moore coming in and being a starter or catching, like, you know, 30 balls for 550 yards or something crazy like that this year. It would be cool if he did, but shoot, like, think about all the 5-stars in this class who put up huge, huge numbers in high school and ran, like, verified stupid good times. Of those, who's actually projected to start? Like, Micah Hudson at Texas Tech, Cam Coleman at Auburn, and Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State. Like, three guys off the top of my head are freshmen who I think will actually, you know, start.
Coleman's a likely starter at Auburn. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And obviously Auburn's receiving core is interesting. Here's the other thing I will say. I saw the McMurphy article. It said that Big Ten SEC sources said are unlikely to add FSU. That is exactly what I would say before I try to lowball somebody. You know, not that negotiations are going on or anything, but
yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with the tweet that you guys are talking about. I've had multiple people tweet it to me or text it to me. Whatever. Yeah. I mean, unlikely. Something partner. What was it? Disruptive partner. I'm just not gonna. I wouldn't worry too much about that. Like Bud said, that is looks to me as though that's a possible negotiation, or it's just like, look, man, whenever you get on this subject matter, a lot of favors get called into reporters to try to put certain narratives out there or whatever else. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's just carrying water for somebody. McMurphy has a fantastic career and is very, you know, has a significant track record when dealing with subject matter. But, you know, you do have people out there with agendas and chosen times to leak certain ideas, thoughts, or whatever else to people. And I just wouldn't live and die by every tweet, article, or whatever else when it comes to this subject matter. So,
also, the headline literally says, unlikely to add if the ACC survives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what, y'all? If Florida State and Clemson are out, the ACC ain't surviving.
Yeah, yeah, that was
it's like as a matter of business, it's dead. So,
anyway. Certainly, if you have any kind of secondary exodus to the Big 12, then yeah, it's gone. I mean, you know, if Florida State and Clemson leave, and then 2 weeks later, you get some kind of grouping of, you know, NC State, Miami, whatever. Whatever the schools might be. Then, yeah, it's done. And, yeah, that'd be tough. As much as I hate the ACC, I don't know that. Or as much as there's times where I kind of despise the ACC and think it has taken some rather amateurish approaches to things and kind of like the fact that you have multiple things named after John Swofford is hilarious to me. Whatever. We won't go down that road an hour into the podcast, but
Raycom wasn't enough of a tribute.
Yeah. Raycom wasn't. Oh, we need to name the MVP of the championship game after him. And shit, there's something else named after Swoff. Well, whatever. Yeah. Good for him. Good for the whole Swofford family. Bud, you got anything else you want to touch on this morning?
I do not, man. I have a meeting and then I got more vertical videos to record. By the way, I do want to address this. I did not put any FSU receivers or running backs in my who is likely to lead the ACC in receiving or rushing.
Yeah.
Yard.
I saw that. I decided that you probably hate Florida State after
seeing that. Clearly, yes. My degree on the wall and the fact that we've been podcasting about Florida State for 15 years. And the fact I've been going to games since I was like, you know, 3 years old. Clearly, my hate for FSU is strong. I just think it's going to be more of a committee approach, right?
And you're going to have a lot of people carrying the ball. I'll say what I said 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Cam Davis is going to get carries, y'all. Cam Davis is very, very impressive. Toa Philly's super talented, but tell me, you know, who's going to get enough carries of Toa Philly, Roy Dell, Kaziah Holmes look great at times in the spring. I'm fully with you there. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there's an outside shot that Benson could be in the conversation at wide receiver, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see what that looks like. And if that, DJU to Benson connection is as strong in season as it was at times in spring.
I completely agree. Also, I don't know that if, I don't know you want to have the leading receiver in the ACC this year. That probably means you're behind in games too much. Right? Like, I mean, if you're throwing the ball that much, that's probably not good. So that's all I got, man.
Have a nine route a game for 60 plus or whatever. And then,
that could happen.
Completions just to build off of it. So
also, like, the Duke kid could do it. Duke's going to be behind in almost all games. They're going to run a million miles an hour tempo wise, you know? So, I still think at this time, my pick is for FSU to win the league. So I think you can do that without having the leading rusher or the leading receiver in the league.
Hater.
They actually did it last year, I believe. So hater for sure. I'll see you, man.
All right, brother. Kingsplane, we'll get to your questions about that. I think a couple other people asked. You know, it'll be a conversation that we continue to have. Appreciate the listen. Appreciate the comments in the for those who watched this live, consumed it live. We'll be back probably something either on or around ACC Media Days with another show. Also had some questions in the chat as to when the frequency of Nolcast start to kick up. For us, that's always been right around August 1st. We'll start to do position previews and other things. But we've
like count and draft.
Like we just said, we've been doing this 15 years. We've got a pretty good rapport as to, you know, when we need to or when an episode is warranted. And yeah, we'll be there when we think we need to. And for us, that normally starts right around the first week of August. So appreciate the listen. Appreciate the watch. This has been the Nolcast. Talk to you soon.